Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today's guest, Dr. Ann Lopez, says this is one of the worst times she's ever seen in the 22 years she's been working with California's farm workers. They have little to no work. They're struggling to pay their rent and buy food. They live in constant fear of deportation because most of the farm worker population is undocumented, and now they are panicked about the coronavirus. When Dr. Lopez began her work 22 years ago, she says hardly anyone was talking about the plight of farm workers. Well, that has drastically changed. She says her organization, the Center for Farmworker Families, has never received so many donations. But she says this is not something a nonprofit should be taking care of. This should be the responsibility of the government. Of the 2.5 million farm workers in the United States, about 420,000 live and work in California. As the state remains under a shelter-in-place policy, farm workers are exempt from staying home because they are deemed essential workers. The fear of contracting the coronavirus is a huge concern for farm workers who are undocumented because they lack health insurance and they do not qualify for federal COVID-19 relief. So what resources are available? And the bigger question, what systemic changes are needed to ensure farm workers have basic rights and dignity? Dr. Ann Lopez is executive director of the Center for Farmworker Families, a Felton, California-based organization that works to improve the lives of farmworker families. Dr. Lopez is an emerita professor at San Jose City College. She's an independent researcher focusing on the human side of the binational migration circuit from the subsistence and small producer farms of West Central Mexico to employment in California's corporate agribusiness. Dr. Ann Lopez is the author of The Farm Worker's Journey. In 2019, she was chosen as Woman of the Year by the 29th California Assembly District. Hi, Dr. Lopez. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, Ann, last week I called you to see if you could join us when we talked about farm workers in Florida, but you were busy buying diapers for farm worker families that you work yeah. with. And you told me that in the 22 years you've been doing this work, this is one of the worst times you've ever seen. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, you know, used to, prior to Corona, we had what we call the hidden food bank, where we partnered with Second Harvest Food Bank in Watsonville, and we went out and bought about $1,500 worth of essential household goods like diapers and paper towels and shampoo and such. And we set up a little market in an undisclosed location, and all these families could come and get food for the month and get household goods, and we knew that they were taken care of. Well, now we can't do that because people get too close together. We have to have the social distancing, so we can't have our hidden food bank. So we're struggling now to find alternative ways of supplying these families with the things they need and making certain that no one is completely lacking in food in their house. We're very fortunate that the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County gave us $20,000 in rental assistance funds, which we've passed out. So that will help the poorest farm workers get through this month. And then the 1440 Foundation has supplied us with huge amounts of black beans and rice, which black beans are the preferred beans for the Oaxacan farm worker community. So we've passed those out, and now we have gotten enough donations to supply diapers, which are the most requested items. We had a diaper handout a few days ago, and now we're planning for another handout of gift cards to Safeway so people can go to the store and purchase whatever they need. So we're just doing kind of a hit and miss, make it through another month until this corona thing is over and we can go back to our normal hidden food banks with distribution.
And why do you need hidden food banks?
Well, because at least two-thirds of the farm workers in this state are undocumented. They live in constant fear of deportation, although I have to say we haven't had raids, at least in Watsonville, in years that I can recall. We have to hide. We alternate. We had a perfect location in Watsonville that was very convenient for all concerned, where we could hide. And we don't want, ICE swooping down and scooping up people who are trying to get food and household goods. Then, unfortunately, the Christian Science Monitor and KSWB came and filmed us and put it on television and in one of their periodicals, and so everybody knew about it. So we had to start alternating the food banks. But we want people to feel safe, and especially the Oaxacan farm workers. They're the most fearful, and they're the most recent of arrivals. And again, we want them to feel safe, and they rarely come out of wherever they're living. They're either in the fields or they're behind a wall somewhere where they're living. And I was just absolutely amazed in December when there were about 600 families that came to our hidden food bank. This was before Corona, the Corona shutdown. And I looked out at this huge mass, this line of this huge mass of humanity, and thought to myself, my God, this is like a whole nother culture in the city of Watsonville that's never seen. I mean, they're constantly hidden, which I think is a real problem. I'm very opposed to not giving undocumented workers who've worked months, years in the field legal status. I think it's cruel.
We'll talk about that in a minute, Anne, but I wanted to go back just to the food. So these workers are picking food in the fields, but they don't have access to the food. Can you talk about food insecurity among farm workers?
That's correct. I joke with people. I say, these people are in the field picking food to feed us, and we have to hide to feed them. I said, what is wrong with this picture?
Wow. So talk more about that. Is it because wages are so low? I mean, what is the average wage for the farm workers you work with in California?
Well, last year, I think it was about $11. This year, in spite of Trump's statement that to help agriculture, we need to cut the wages of farm workers, I thought, are you kidding me? But I've been asking around, and now the wage is about $13, so it's going up. But most farm workers don't make more than about $20,000 a year. And some places to rent cost $2,000 a month, $2,500 a month. One single woman who rents a house pays, she works 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and all but $300 goes to paying her rent. So she ends up with $300 left to support her four children as a single mother.
Wow. Is this typical in California with the farm workers you work with, Anne? They've got 10-hour days, 6 days a week?
Yep. And supposedly, we have now an overtime. I think it was Lorena Gonzalez who got AB 1066 regarding overtime pay in a couple of years ago. But I haven't heard of any farm worker getting overtime pay. Generally speaking, rather than paying farm workers overtime over the 8-hour day, the growers will let them go which then reduces their overall wages or salaries for that period of time.
And the UFW often tweets out pictures of farm workers, whether it's cutting celery, picking radishes. And sometimes in the tweets, they say, thanks to union protections, this farm worker, you know, gets overtime, has shade, has access to water. What about the farm workers you work with? Are any of them protected by a union?
No, no. I know of no farm workers protected by anything. We have organized two or three attorneys that help them with issues from immigration to rental issues. But they have no protections. They have no rights. And fortunately, in Santa Cruz County, the Housing Authority has come up with standards, and I think they're reflective of the state, about what landlords can do to farm workers. For instance, there's been cases where a landlord will show up at an apartment that they're renting to farm workers and just think they have a right to come right into the apartment and do whatever they want. And now we have a rule that landlords have to give a 3-day notice before they can enter a rented apartment. There's another rule about how much the rent can be raised. I heard of one farm worker who was terribly distressed because her landlord told her that the rent was going to increase $1,000 a month. And then the Housing Authority came out with, I think it was 5 to 7% a year is all that they can raise the rent. So there's unscrupulous landlords who don't maintain their property and who continue to intimidate and harass farm workers, which further adds to their pain. And housing in Watsonville is ridiculous. The prices of housing, of rental of apartments, or if you can call them that, dilapidated structures, is just absolutely outrageous.
And when we've done shows before, listeners often ask, are the farm workers working on organic farms treated any better than farm workers working on conventional farms?
No, with the exception of a couple. The two outstanding examples in the state of California that I know of are Jim Cochran's strawberry farm, Swanton Berry Farm. He actually has a UFW contract for every farm worker. So they definitely have rights, and they're definitely treated with dignity. Another location is Pie Ranch up by Davenport, and they also treat farm workers with dignity and labor rights. But it really doesn't make much of a difference if the benefit of working on an organic farm is you're not exposed to toxic pesticides.
Right.
But this thing of, you know, slavery was supposed to end in, what, 1863 with the Emancipation Proclamation. And I just think that this whole system is a carryover from those slave days. In fact, prior to the Emancipation Proclamation, California was destined to be a slave state. And so since we can't have that, this is kind of the next best, quote, best thing to it, where you've got this subjugated class of workers who have basically no rights, are not afforded legal status, and are always threatened if they rise up or confront a grower or a supervisor, or threatened with blacklisting or deportation. So I think this needs to change. There needs to be some reconciliation of the very hard work and lack of rights, health care, exposure to pesticides, lack of adequate nutrition because of poor salaries, et cetera. All of this needs to be revised so that farm workers have the same rights as any other worker in other industries. I mean, this is hard work. These people die at an average life expectancy of 49 years. They're disposable human beings. I mean, we must change this system.
Today we're speaking with Dr. Ann Lopez, Executive Director of the Center for Farmworker Families, a Felton, California-based organization that works to improve the lives of farmworker families. Dr. Lopez is author of the book, The Farmworker's Journey. If you have any questions for Ann, we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We're talking today about what farm workers are, just what their everyday lives are like and how COVID-19 has changed that. The big question is, what systemic changes are needed to ensure farm workers have basic rights and dignity? Last week, we spoke about the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Those are farm workers in Florida. And today we're talking about farm workers in California. And can you just tell us what happens when farm workers do demand basic human rights and dignity on the job? I'm sure, depending on where they work, it changes, but can you share a few stories with us?
Well, they don't. They don't ask for those things because they're all afraid. You know, in fact, when I heard about the scarcity of labor last year, I told a group of farm workers, go to your supervisor or the grower and tell them you want $15 an hour or you're not going to work for them. And they won't do it. They live in constant fear. I mean, that's just the context of their lives. And it takes somebody from the outside, I guess, like me, to go in and see what's going on and start raising hell about it on other levels for these issues to even become recognized. But they live on the edge of survival in impoverished conditions that none of us would want or we should not tolerate in our, I mean, this is the richest country in the world, and we have these workers living in this brutal poverty. They are the poorest of the working poor, and this is unacceptable. No one should accept this. I just think it reduces the dignity of all of us to have such hardworking people living in the circumstances that they do.
And are they working on farms that are owned by, you know, your small family farmer? Are we talking about big corporate farmers, big corporate farms, I should say?
What I see is big corporate farmers, at least in the Watsonville area. I would say that the ones where they're working on family farms, I think they're treated more humanely. They usually get less pay because, you know, the corporate farms have more funds, but so it's kind of a trade-off for many of them. But most of them, you know, are in the corporate farms that are run by people that are, you know, with a strict hierarchy and run the business, essentially run the business.
Have you had many conversations with these corporate farm workers?
No,
owners?
Oh, the owners? No, I don't deal with the growers. I'm sure they're probably not happy with me with the work that I do with farm workers. But I have participated in protests, I will confess. One in particular, and I don't want to give names out so I don't get caught for slander, whatever, but one in particular has subsidiaries in Baja, California, and growing the same crop. And David Bacon did a study of that area of Baja and found that the military was sent out to beat the farm workers. And this is just another level of atrocity in my mind. So there was a group of protesters from the same company and organization from Yakima, Washington, and they marched through the state down to Baja, and I joined their protest when they were in Watsonville. So I, you know, that's about the only place I interface other than with Jim Cochran of Swanton Berry Farm, because I feel that he treats the farm workers justly.
Before we get to a call, Ann, I want to ask you about COVID-19 testing. What are you hearing from farm workers in terms of COVID-19, how they're feeling, and have any of them been tested?
No, I've never heard of a single test. In fact, in the whole area of Santa Cruz County, I have not heard of a test. I'm sure we have, I think, 104 cases in the county and three or four people in the hospital, and so I'm sure all of them were tested. But what I'm hearing from farm workers is that when they go to work, there's strict 6-foot distancing requirements, and that they can't eat with their friends for lunch. They have to be separated at lunch, and apparently the growers are very, I talked to a doctor I work with in Salinas who treats farm workers, and he says that the growers are very concerned about COVID-19 because they don't want to lose their crews. So they're instituting all of the social recommendations to prevent the spread of the disease within the farm worker population. Thus far, I have not heard of a single case among farm workers, and we have three groups, each of which are making 100 masks to pass out to the community. So we're doing what we can to make sure farm workers stay healthy.
And when we spoke with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers last week in Florida, they said that hospitals are not nearby and they're very concerned about what would happen if farm workers got sick. What's the situation with the farm workers you're in contact with in the Central Valley?
Well, the Central Coast here. We have a couple of hospitals, and I have to say, in particular, Dominican Hospital, when I've sent farm workers to that hospital, they are very attentive. I feel that farm workers are treated fairly, and they have charity care, and I think it's the best care that farm workers have had medically. So I probably, if I heard that somebody had COVID-19, I would send them to Dominican because I know that they would get the best care there.
Well, let's take a caller before we go to break. Let's hear from Holly in San Francisco. Hi, Holly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I was just thinking about the fact that they are cooking fruit, our food, and going hungry. Are they allowed? Are farm workers allowed to take food home at the end of the day, like a day's worth of food for their family?
No, that's the irony. They pick food for us. They provide our food that we buy in the stores, and we have to hide to feed them. That's what I'm saying. No, they're not allowed to take food.
Well, thank you for calling, Holly. Just to add to this, farm working communities like Monterey County has one of the highest rates of food insecurity in the state at about 34%.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and coming up after the break, we will speak with Andrea, an undocumented farm worker who does not want her real name used, and her daughter will translate for us. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about California's farm workers with Dr. Ann Lopez, Executive Director of the Center for Farm Worker Families, a Felton, California-based organization that works to improve the lives of farm worker families. Now I would like to welcome Andrea to the show. Andrea is an undocumented farm worker who does not want her real name used, and Andrea's daughter will translate for us. Hi, thank you so much for joining us.
Buenos días. Hola.
Hola. I understand that you came to the United States from Mexico right around the time when NAFTA was passed. Can you talk about why you decided to come to the U.S. and what that journey was like?
Porque queriste venir a los Estados Unidos y porque cómo fue ese camino.
Pues me vine a los Estados Unidos porque en mi pueblo es mucha pobreza.
She came to the United States because in her city there's much poverty.
And can you talk about the journey from Mexico to the United States?
Yo caminé 5 noches y 5 días. Caminé para llegar aquí y me traje a mis hijas, a mis 2 hijas, en la espalda. En la espalda me traje a mi hija menor que tenía 7 meses o 9 meses, y mi esposo se trajo a mi hija que tenía casi 2 años.
She came here, she walked 5 nights and 5 days, and she carried her 2 daughters in her back. She carried the youngest, and then her husband carried the oldest.
Y en la mano traía comida.
And then in her hand she had food.
And how did you end up in California?
Sí, por el coyote. Por un coyote, primero caminé esos 5 días y entonces llegamos a Arizona. Ahí nos fue a recoger un Ben.
A coyote, a guy that brings people from Mexico to the United States, brought them, and until she got to Arizona, they picked them in a van and took them to California.
Okay.
Watsonville.
And Anne, can you jump in here and just talk about what you hear from other farm workers about just the grueling journey and how difficult it is to get here, especially when you have children?
Oh, well, absolutely. And not only that, it's very expensive. And now, in the past few years, the cartels have gotten involved, and they will actually, we had one case where a cartel member told a person they helped get over the border into the United States that they had a certain amount of time to pay the fee for getting them into the United States, or they would find them and kill them. And when I heard that, I called the police, and the police were willing to offer the person shelter because, you know, this is totally illegal to be out hunting somebody to kill because they can't pay. So, you know, there's that issue, and then a lot of people die in the desert. You know, I remember reading about the morgues in Arizona where they didn't have enough room, actually, for all the dead bodies from people fleeing Mexico. And, you know, I think we have to be conscious of the fact that this country's trade agreement that we pushed under Clinton in NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, deprived the farmers in Mexico of their livelihood that they had maintained a sustainable form of farming for, we think, 7,000 to 9,000 years. And they lost that, and they had no way to support their families and survive but to go to big cities, come to the United States as an undocumented worker, or stay in their villages and starve with their families. And I met people that made all of those choices. But the fact that we have so many undocumented workers in this state is a reflection of NAFTA's influence in really fomenting this huge migration of farmers out of Mexico. Salinas de Gortari, the president at the time of NAFTA, estimated 1 million farmers would leave their land every year for the first 15 years of NAFTA. That's 15 million farmers. Where are they supposed to go? Mm-hmm. And these are the things I don't see people addressing in this country. I think, if anything, we owe farm workers reparations for the inordinate pain and suffering that I've seen in these separated families, with some people living here, others in villages in Mexico, just tearing families apart at every turn. I just think it's been a humanitarian disaster, and it was never publicized, and no one ever talks about it. And that is the basis for the undocumented farm worker population in this state. It's shameful.
Well, Andrea, can you talk about the work that you have done in California? I understand you started working on strawberry farms, and then your back started hurting you, so you went to apples. But then you had to carry 30-pound bags of apples, and that resulted in torn ligaments.
She is still working in the strawberry, even though her back hurts, because there's no other work she could do, because she doesn't know how to speak English, and she doesn't know how to speak very well Spanish.
Can you talk about just how difficult the work is, and how many hours do you work daily, and do you have access to health care if you need it?
Dice que cuántas horas trabajas, cómo trabajas, y si tienes alguien, un programa que te ayuda.
De para la,
yo creo, para la, entonces,
para el doctor.
Ajá.
Pues trabajo 7 horas o 8 horas en el field, agachado, y qué más, entonces, si tengo un programa, un doctor. Sí, voy a una clínica donde no pago si es que no gano mucho.
¿Vas a una clínica que no paga?
Si me cobran, ¿cómo te diré? Si no gano mucho dinero, me cobran,
¿poquito?
Me cobran poquito.
She says that she works crouch in the strawberries for like 8 hours and or 7, and that she doesn't have no help in medical care, and that they just pays her less if she works in the field for a doctor.
Andrea, what major changes would you like to see, given that this is backbreaking work and most farm workers just don't have basic rights?
¿Qué quieres mirar y cambios de los que trabajan en el fin? ¿Qué es lo que quieres que cambie? Porque los del fin no tienen muchos derechos.
¿Qué quiero que se cambie? Pues más con las rentas. Con las rentas queremos tener ¿cómo se dice? Casas donde vivir. Porque es lo que más quiero. Y que nos paguen más mejor en el fil, para que nos alcance más el dinero.
She's saying that the rent where we live right now is too high, and that for many farm workers right now, there's not many places to live, and that she wants that to change, that she wants homes to be made for the farm workers, and that they get, and that they should get more paid, because so they could use their money more for food and all the stuff.
And can I ask you, her daughter, if you don't mind answering, and if you don't want to, that's fine. As the daughter of farm workers, What are your thoughts on this? What changes would you like to see?
I would want to have more time with my mom because she comes like at 5 and then she wakes up like at 6 in the morning and she comes at like at 5 and then she doesn't want to do nothing but just want to sleep and like rest for the whole day. And like we just have like one day in a week to see, like to have a family day. So like we like don't spend very much time with them because they work for us and they are just strong, I think.
What about just the, so your parents are basically tired because the work is so difficult because they're working so long.
Yes. Yeah, because sometimes my mom comes and she tells me that she just tells me that she doesn't want nothing, that she just wants to rest and eat and sleep. And that's it because that her back hurts and her waist hurts and that her legs are like exhausted and like she doesn't want to do nothing like, doesn't want to do nothing and like she just tells us to make her food and just then she just go take a shower and then she just leap and that's it.
Any final thoughts you'd like to leave with us just about the changes you'd like to see for your family and the other farm workers that you know you come in contact with on a regular basis?
To be a citizen from this state and to not be afraid to live with undocumented parents and like to be like out freely without nobody telling us that to get out of this country or that we're useless and that we should not be here.
And can I ask you, do you experience that?
Well, sometimes I do and sometimes I don't because I speak English, so they don't know if I'm born from here or not. And like, so they just guess sometimes or no. But like, yeah, I am afraid because I'm not from here and I'm afraid to be kicked out of this state and go to Mexico where there's like no job and like there's a lot of poverty where my mom tells me that my other aunts lives and like they can't do nothing. So many from there wants to come here, but it's too much to pay for someone to bring them here.
Well, thank you so much for translating. And Andrea, thank you so much for joining us. We would love to have you back. Thank you so much.
Oh, sí. Gracias. Y pues también otra palabra, gracias a la doctora, que la doctora Ann López, ella nos ha ayudado mucho.
She wants to say thank you to Ann López, Dr. Ann López, because she has helped us very much.
Well, thank you so much. That is Andrea, an undocumented farm worker who doesn't want her real name used. Her daughter was translating for her. When NAFTA passed, she and her husband and two kids traveled here from Mexico. As you heard, it was a grueling journey. And now she's working in the fields of California. We're also joined by Dr. Ann Lopez, Executive Director of the Center for Farm Worker Families, a Felton, California-based organization that works to improve the lives of farm worker families. And what has really changed under the Trump administration when it comes to xenophobia and racism against farm workers like Andrea?
Well, it's just, I mean, to me, it's just a real tragedy because my personal experience of farm workers is that they're some of the highest quality human beings I've ever met on the planet. I've traveled to many countries and these people are just, they're kind, they're giving, they're caring, they are generous, they'll do anything for you. They're just wonderful kind of human beings. I mean, not that there aren't things in the community that aren't good, but that's true of any community. But as people, they're wonderful people. And so when I hear Trump saying things like they're murderers and rapists and an infestation coming in from Mexico and all this kind of horrific nonsense, it's appalling to me. And I think people who don't speak Spanish, don't know the culture, any of that, are potentially subject to believing a lot of this stuff. And I mean, it's one of the reasons we have such a divided nation. And we are the most diverse country in the world, and that's our strength. And to make an issue of it and demonize so many different groups, I just think is disgraceful. I can't imagine having this kind of a president leading the richest country in the world and most influential. It's just, it's appalling to me, and it creates a heaviness. It's so inconsistent with what we really need. So, I'm just hoping we have new leadership in the future.
And I was really struck by what Andrea's daughter said, just about not having time with her family, not having time with her mom and her dad, because they're just so tired after they come home from this long day on the farm.
Right, right. That's true. I think almost all farm worker families are fit into that category. They are. That's one of the issues. And one reason why they die young is because they're overworked. I mean, this work is brutal. And it's, they're overworked. And when you do it 6 days a week nonstop during the growing season, it's just very difficult. This other woman that we work with that has four children who are citizens, at one time she was undocumented but managed to get a visa, thank goodness. But she was exposed to chlorpyrifos when she was pregnant in the field. So not only does she come home exhausted, but she has two sons, young sons. I think one's 12 and one's 7, with ADHD, and they never stop. They're bouncing off the wall, even with medication, and she's got them in some psychotherapy. But her life not only involves working, overwork in the fields, but she has to take time off to take them to therapy appointments and to deal with their issues from the exposure to pesticides. So these families have challenges that most of us will never have to face, really.
And we have about 5 minutes left. Let's talk about the systemic changes you'd like to see. Because as you said earlier in the show, farm workers are too afraid to complain if they're treated poorly. You don't know of any farm worker on the Central Coast that makes more than $20,000 a year. And this is a 10-hour day, 6-day-a-week job. We talked about the Trump administration wanting to cut their pay. So what we've seen so far is that California Governor Gavin Newsom has put together, or he's putting together, a fund. And according to the governor, about 150,000 undocumented workers will get a $500 cash payment. More money could be allocated soon, but nothing has come through yet. And Ann, this is a Democratic state. I mean, what are we hearing from Senators Harris and Feinstein when it comes to improving the lives of California's farm workers? And
well,
what changes would you like to see from them?
I think this system has been in place for so long that people just take it for granted. I really think that it takes people like you and me confronting the system and waking people up. And I see this happening. I think there is a wave of consciousness. I mean, just the fact that when I got this grant from Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County for $20,000 to help with farm work, for rental assistance. They said one of the reasons was because these were, quote, essential workers. I have never heard farm workers referred to as essential workers. I mean, that is a major shift. So there's been an outpouring during this corona thing of all kinds of aid coming in for farm workers, more than I've ever experienced in the organization. So I think that there is an awareness growing. You ask you want to know my dream for how I would like to see the state's agriculture transformed, and that would be, first of all, we don't need pesticides. I've done speeches up at UC Santa Cruz where I've gone through each of the different groups that are responsible for the farming system, including consumers. Everybody loses except for the agro industries in this system. It's a failed system. And I would like to see the industrial agricultural system transform to regenerative agroecological farming and have groups of farm workers that are in cooperatives, organized in cooperatives, and everybody shares in the profits running these farms. There's been several studies, including an excellent study by the UN, and the Rodale Institute did a 30-year study you can look up online about how we could feed the entire world's population if we converted to organic agriculture overnight. And so the question is, why aren't we doing that? Why are we insisting on using these agrochemicals that poison us, that damage our health and damage the environment? We're losing species at an alarming rate, and it's basically undercutting the biology that supports all life on the planet. We must do something different, and that's what I would like to see.
What can people do to change things? We have a tweet from Jennifer who says, "This is atrocious. How can we help? If I can avoid eating food picked by slave labor, I will. Other than Swanberry Farms, what are the other good farms?" And, you know, in general, Anne, what else can people do?
Well, I think that what we need is a groundswell of people in this state complaining about these conditions and the fact that they never know. That's one of the issues where consumers lose. They unwittingly eat the food, even if it is organic, of basically a slave labor force. The issue of labor rarely enters the equation. People are very concerned about getting organic produce, non-GMO, but no one talks about the labor behind this food that's so brutal. And so I think that there needs to be a groundswell of public sentiment demanding change. When the grassroots demands change, usually it happens. And I've seen this just in my experience working in this organization, where we used to have the 50-mile regulation in the 22 states' migrant camps, and parents at the end of the season would have to uproot their children, move 50 miles away, and then come back the following season. Well, the kids would end up going to at least two schools. Nobody graduated from high school, and they ended up being farm workers or going into gangs. And we worked 8 years on this, and we finally got a legislator to come out and hear the stories in the migrant camp in Watsonville. And once she heard the stories, she was so upset that she called the attorney general's office right from the unit that the farm worker was living in. And then from there, she wrote, a text to Jerry Brown at the time, and he signed legislation to end the 50-mile regulation. Well, that's what's needed. We need a groundswell of public opinion demanding change and demanding that farm workers have rights and are treated humanely, have a living wage, comprehensive immigration reform, and a contract with the grower so the grower cannot steal their wages. That's what we need. And so any letters to legislators, calls to their office, whatever, protests, whatever it takes, it's time for change, and all of us will benefit.
Dr. Ann Lopez is Executive Director of the Center for Farmworker Families, a Felton, California-based organization that works to improve the lives of farmworker families. Dr. Lopez is also author of The Farmworker's Journey. Ann, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for your invitation.
And last week, you can find a show we did about farm workers with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. These are farm workers who live in Florida. You can find that at yourcallradio.org. You can also find more information about farm workers at yourcallradio.org, and we will definitely continue to focus on this very important issue. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show, Kevin Vance, our studio engineer, and thanks, Kevin, for connecting with our guests. You can find more about Your Call at yourcallradio.org. A few of the shows we did last week: why is it taking so long to ramp up COVID-19 testing in the U.S.? We also talked about support available for survivors of domestic violence. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.